Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to RTC's Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Today, we are going to visit with Sam Spade. It's been a while, and we've got to get back and hear some more from Sam Spade. This one's called Caper Over My Dead Body, and it dates from 1950.
In response to requests representing millions of listening friends, the National Broadcasting Company is pleased indeed to bring you again The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Hello?
Me, sweet. What number have I got?
The Sam Spade Detective Agency, but...
Oh, well, me, sweetheart.
Something's happened. Call me later, Dwight.
Dwight yet? Look.
I didn't know you were in town. You didn't write to me or...
Effie, F.
Yes?
This is me in the flesh, Sammy the Spade. Oh, now what?
Goodbye.
Effie, I'm in a payphone. My nickel is running out.
Oh, Dwight, how can you be so cruel and play jokes at a time like this?
Wait, listen. Ella, you listening?
Yes.
I am not dead. Don't believe everything you read in the papers.
Huh?
Or here on the radio.
Yes.
You were at my funeral. Is that what you were about to say?
Yes. And it was lovely.
Don't believe that either. Stay right where you are, sweetheart, because I'll be there, alive and handsomer than ever, with an account of a caper which proves you can kill some of the people part of the time. My exaggerated report on the death of Sam Spade.
NBC welcomes back to the air a character who has captured the public imagination more completely than any other since the birth of Sherlock Holmes. William Spear, radio's outstanding producer, director of mystery and crime drama, brings you the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Ain't it grand to be blooming well dead? Candles at my feet, candles
I'm
at
sorry,
my head.
But we're not open for business today. I mean, Mr. Spade's office is closed right now because...
I'll wait.
Oh, you look just like Mr. Spade. What's your name?
Spade. S-P-A-D-E. Spade.
Sam never told me he had a twin brother.
He doesn't.
But then you...
I'm me, Sam.
Oh, no, you...
Oh, wait. Come here. Now do you believe me?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, what's the use?
Oh, you're so much like him.
Oh, never mind. Now get your pencil and paper and take it. Date, November 17th, 1950. To Miss Effie Perrine.
That's me.
From Samuel Spade. That's me. License number 137596.
You must have been the last one to see him alive. Did he tell you to give me a message?
Shut up. Subject, my death. Dear Effie, since the sight of me in the flesh, breathing, hungering, and living doesn't convince you, maybe this report will. Think, if you can, back to last Monday. Now, if you recall, it was about 11 o'clock when, on the flimsy pretense that we needed stamps for the office, you drew $2 from petty cash and stepped out to buy a pair of step-ins. And that's when my client materialized. He was small and thin and carried with him the unmistakable odor of stale flowers. His black alpaca suit, string bow tie, elevator shoes, and white gloves had no bearing on his conversation.
Oh, dear. My name is Chester Swan.
Are you sure?
Yes.
My name is Spade. What can I do for you?
How tall are you, Mr. Spade?
6 feet in my feet.
Weight?
178.
I always notice a man's bone structure, don't you?
Oh, always.
Open.
Huh?
Open. Let me see inside.
Oh.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Fine.
Oh, well, now that you know me this well, Mr. Swan, what can I do for you?
Oh, dear. Perhaps I shouldn't have come here at all. I'm sorry, Mr. Spade.
Well, really?
Oh, dear.
Oh, hello again, Mr. Swan. You wanted to talk to me?
Yes, but I can't talk now. Mr. Spade.
Still here.
There. I live at 8516 Claremont in Berkeley. I'll be there tonight. Oh, dear.
This time, as he made his exit, he left $50 on the edge of my desk. And so, stupid me, I was at 8516 Claremont at the close of the day. It was a small white cottage with green shutters and a white picket fence. There was a hill in back and a brook in front. The sun was beginning to set on it, and it was all very picturesque. In fact, so much so that a girl with red hair, blue jeans, purple smock, oils, and canvas was making it immortal. She liked me immediately.
Here, hold this.
Certainly.
Like it?
Oh, yeah.
This is my first landscape. I'm a sprouting artist.
Obvious. Makes your own?
Not when I can get somebody to do it for me. Who are you?
Oh, I might be a fellow artist.
Don't do that. You're a liar. You're Sam Spade. I saw your picture in a newspaper clipping when I was helping Chester clean out his desk before he moved it. You don't know an easel from a palette?
Oh, but I could learn.
I take it seriously.
Well, then so do I.
I doubt it. You've never tried to get away, to stand off, to throw off the shackles, have you?
No. I'll have to admit that the urgency of living, the pressure of merely existing, has had to...
Catfish, Sam. By the way, I'm Amy Goodrich.
Catfish?
The world is full of unhappy people who never try to get away from it all.
Well, honestly...
Stop it.
But I wanted to, really.
Honestly, Sam, get away from everything. Leave, dissolve.
I've dreamed of it.
Never return.
Cross my heart.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing here?
To see Mr. Swan.
He isn't home yet. His house is a wonderful subject. Look, Sam, colorful, moderate, pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
That is, until the sun stops shining. But picture it at night in the fog.
Mm-hmm.
Crushed with barrenness, full of death, brooding, ominous. I'm trying to capture that, too. It's what we've got to get away from, isn't it?
Absolutely. You and I...
Sam, as you start up the hill on Claremont, there's a green apartment house on the right. I'm in 420.
Well, maybe we'll find a way out together.
Maybe.
I waved her a fond farewell and sat on the steps of my client's house until he showed up at 6:15. He took me inside, where the only furniture was an army cot and a portable barbecue.
I'm so glad you kept our appointment, Mrs. Spade. I'm so frightened. I've been upset all week long. I didn't know what to do. I just didn't.
And what have you been so upset about, Mr. Swan?
Well, lately, Mr. Spade, infrequently, for the last week, I've noticed a man. I think he's following me.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I'd see him in a car following my bus when I went downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Then he'd be waiting around at the bus stop in the evening when I came back.
Oh.
I've sold my house, and I'm ready to move. It's unnerved me so much, but...
Did he follow you home tonight?
No, but
well,
I...
Well, would anyone be following you, Mr. Swan?
Well, I don't know, Mr. Spade. I don't know. I really don't.
All right, I'll try another tack. What does this man look like?
He always wears dark clothes and a hat. I'd say he was about your height.
6 feet.
I remember. Maybe heavier. Same bone structure, though.
Yeah. You haven't been to the police?
Oh, dear, no. A man in my business can't afford off-color publicity.
No? What kind of business is that?
The Bon Ton Mortuary.
Oh.
25 years.
Ooh.
Same location.
Ooh.
Oh, and I've worked hard. So very hard. And if there's something behind all this, something that had stopped me from being made the executive secretary of the Undertaker's Breakfast Club when they hold their annual election next month, I don't know what I'll do, Mr. Spade.
Hmm.
I just don't really know what I'll do. I just don't.
Oh, go ahead, Mr. Swan. You'll feel better. Just let it all out. Just really do. And he did. When he stopped crying, I instructed him to go about his daily habits as always and left, assuring him I'd get to the bottom of it all. I walked down to the corner ostentatiously, which is a neat trick well calculated to throw nefarious observers off the track and lull them into false security. And when the bus showed up 10 minutes later, I got on it, rode 3 blocks, walked back, and took a plant across the street. A clever ruse, as you see, to invite a showdown. 2 hours later, a man about my size and dark clothes appeared over the hill and crept stealthily to the front of my client's cottage. He had his eyes glued to the window when I walked up behind him.
Hey, let go of me.
Come on, you're going inside.
Listen, I'm no peeping Tom.
No, you're the bloodhound type. I'm inviting you in for a real sniff at
your party. Oh, no, you don't. Well, all right, then I'll go quietly.
Okay, that's better. Now we'll just walk on. The kick he landed on me wasn't according to Queensberry. I couldn't move for 3 or 4 minutes, and by that time he disappeared. When I recovered my faculties, I reported the incident to my client, who cried himself to sleep. After I bolted him in for the night, I stopped on my way down the hill at apartment 420 in the little green apartment house. She was still wearing the blue jeans and the purple smock. And she still had the same ideas.
Come in, Sam. You said you were serious about getting away from it all, and a whole day has passed.
It was that pressure of living. I'm here to apologize.
You are not, but go ahead.
I'm sorry, Angel.
I love to be fooled, Sam. You're forgiven.
How's the painting coming? The one of Swan's Cottage.
Slow. Fog is always tough.
Looks nice, though. How long you been on it?
3 weeks, all told.
Well, then you've had a pretty good plant on the house, haven't you? Ever notice a tall, broad-shouldered guy in a dark suit casing the place?
Tall, broad-shouldered?
Pretty much like me.
Could anybody be pretty much like you, Sam?
No, you're right.
Sam, is there something wrong?
No.
Well, then don't stand there doing nothing. Do something.
Who, me? Amy fixed me a small dinner, which had a strong turpentine taste to it, and then we mixed oils and painted and made fudge. Next afternoon, at the Hall of Records, I did a little spade work on Chester Swan. His application and permit to practice undertaking in the city of San Francisco were dated 1938. Details, unmarried, 52 years of age. Graduated from mortician school in Ohio. Listed one living relative, nephew, Theodore J. Swan, Toledo, Ohio. I was gathering the above information when I smelled whiskey over my shoulder, which is always good luck. It was Al Torrington, who was also in the private investigation racket in this city, and he was leaning, peering from my face to the card that I held in my hand.
Get over to you too, Sam?
Who got over to me, Al?
Him? That thinny with the tears? What's his name? My eyes ain't so good.
Swan, Al. Chester Swan. Mortician.
Yeah, that's him, Sam. The same one exactly. Came to my office 2 weeks complaining about somebody following him. And he did nothing about it. Said I was too fat.
Oh, well, you are, Al. Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure. And some other, the boy, said he was around there, too. Wanted a private eye, but he wanted a man who looked just right.
How right?
Obviously as right as you are, Sam, because it looks like he picked you. Yeah.
Yes, F, it did look like he picked me. And I thought that over, and I didn't like it. And I called my client at home to tell him he was fired, but he didn't give me a chance.
Oh, dear, I'm so glad you called, Mr. Spade. I really am.
I called for a reason, Mr. Swan. I'm resigning this case.
Oh, dear, Mr. Spade, you can't do that. You really can't.
I don't think you've been quite honest with me, Mr. Swan.
Oh, dear.
Tears will get you nowhere. I made a routine check on your reasons for hiring me, and they don't quite fit with the reasons you gave. They really just don't quite, Mr. Swan.
It's no game, Mr. Spade. Believe me, he's back tonight. Right now, he's standing beneath the lamppost outside my window, and I'm frightened to death. Please hurry over, Mr. Spade, and let's get this business straightened out. Please, please.
And stupid, stupid me, I went over. And I found that little white cottage on the hill looking grim and gaunt in the heavy fog. Amy's words about it being crushed with barrenness, full of brooding and death, came back to me. And Mr. Swan's frightened words about a mysterious man in dark clothes waiting beneath the streetlight also came back to me, particularly when I noted there was no streetlight near the house. However, there was a light somewhere in the rear of the house, and the front door was ajar. Oh, Mr. Swan! Mr. Swan, are you here? Oh, Mr. Swan, it's me, Sam Spade. Are you here?
Mr. Spade? Is that you? Are you out there?
Where are you? Things happened fast. I turned around to find the front door filled with a man in a dark suit. He had something in his hand. It looked like a roll of cotton candy, but it felt different. It only staggered me against the wall, but it made me forget where my arms were.
Easy, Spade. Easy does it, boy. Easy.
He let me down to the floor gently. I could still see the lights somewhere in the back of the house, and I could hear him talking way off.
Take off his coat. Quick. Give me the needle.
Hurry. I can't watch. I'm going upstairs.
The needle went somewhere in my left arm, but not before somebody pulled my coat off, and for no reason I could think of at the moment, also tried to pull my finger off. Well, I couldn't dwell on it. By that time, the stuff in my arm was going other places, and I was going with it, even though there was action all around me.
This ought to do it!
No, stay away from me! Get out of here!
Vaguely, somewhere, somebody was shooting Roman candles or having blowouts or playing bebop. I just didn't care at all. I just didn't. The first thing I saw was sunlight. It was the kind you see in a picture. It was a picture of a little white cottage with green shutters. You guessed it. I was in Amy's apartment where we made fudge together. I got to my feet somehow.
Right here. I've had it here for 2 days. We'll have to figure out the best thing to do with him, though.
I knew the best thing to do with me. There was a fire escape in a window. I got out there and I weaved against the wall.
What do you mean he's gone? He couldn't have gotten away with that load he was carrying.
I don't know. I don't know. He was unconscious when I left.
Well, don't just stand there. We've got to do something. There might be trouble. Now, let's get going.
I didn't wait to find out what they were going to do. I made my way down the fire escape and started walking for the street. And that's when I noticed my shoes didn't fit me anymore. They weren't mine. And neither was the gray flannel suit with the label marked Tidkeys. Neither was the blue shirt. While I was at it, the ring on my finger engraved Emerson High 1936 wasn't mine either. My new belt buckle had a big letter T on it, which is not my initial. It really isn't. And I didn't have any use for the eyeglasses in my coat pocket either. You were out when I walked in the office, F, but you'd been there. There was a black crepe done up in a white satin ribbon hanging on the door. The desk blotter was drenched with salt tears, and a newspaper folded back to page 13, and I'll sue the Chronicle on this if it's the last thing I do, gave me a 2-inch spread. Item, November 15th, 1950. 15? What happened to the 13th and the 14th? Detective perishes in Berkeley fire. I read it through once, then twice. It was my obituary.
You are listening to the first in a new series of adventures involving radio's most famous detective, Sam Spade. Later tonight on most NBC stations, Duffy's Tavern comes your way with another merry half-hour session, starring Ed Gardner as Archie the manager. There's a full serving of laughs garnished with chuckles and whipped up by Archie and his unpredictable friends, Miss Duffy, Clifton Finnegan, and Eddie the waiter. It's just one of the many great Friday evening entertainment features on NBC. It's Duffy's Tavern, your cue for better listening where the three chimes always mean good times. Make it a Friday evening habit to tune early and stay late at your favorite NBC station. Now back to Caper Over My Dead Body, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
I left the crepe on the door and went out to buy a new desk blotter and some more newspapers. The Hobo News had the best story, which wasn't much. Samuel Spade, licensed private investigator, perished Wednesday night in a fire in a vacant house in Berkeley. His warm friends will feel regret at the passing of a man who was always kind to the poor. None of us ever asked Sam Spade for a handout without receiving a kind word and bon mot as he turned us down. This was nice, but I wanted more. Figured I was fairly safe to wander about unrecognized. My ill-fitting attire acquired from my unknown benefactor would be disguise enough when combined with my 2-day beard. Engine Company 16, Berkeley Division, had handled the fire, and half a block away was a grog shop called the Shamrock. I waited for a fireman to come in.
Bartender. Bartender! What kind of a place are you running now? I've been here 5 minutes already.
All right, shut up, Patty. You just arrived.
Well, it seemed like 5 minutes. A wee bit more there, if you don't mind.
That's enough for you, Patty. You're still on duty.
I am not. I'm off now. The chief said I could be off. This ain't every day I receive such a shock to me system.
You received your shock 3 days ago.
And I'm still shaking, man. Oh, the sight of him was terrible, terrible. Burnt as black as the good saint's beard. All twisted and horrible in death.
He was probably dead drunk and didn't know what happened to him.
And were you there fighting the flames and finding him like me? Hmm? Oh, it was terrible, terrible, terrible. Terrible.
It wasn't that bad, and you've had your limit.
And who says so?
I say so.
Oh, you do, do you? And who are you?
Your brother-in-law.
Well, now.
Well, maybe I can spot you one, Peg.
I never drink with strangers. What's your name?
O'Doolan.
Well, you heard the man. Go ahead, pour. Cheers.
Yeah.
Fireman, you had a terrible experience 3 days ago.
Oh, that I did, Mr. O'Doolan. That I did indeed, that I did.
I've heard it a dozen times. I'll be at the other end.
It was three nights ago, Mr. O'Doolan, and we get a call to the house on Claremont is a fire. Well, sir, when we get there, it's about all gone. Can't understand why it went up flames so fast.
Wood.
It was the funeral pyre of a man who lived in sin.
Huh?
A detective fellow. Sam Spade, he was identified as. Oui.
Oh, one moment, Fireman. I've heard fine things about him.
Ah, some of those uppity police fellas from the Division of Homicide says he was a nice fellow. But some of the boys at the fire station and myself, well, we got our own ideas about that.
Oh, what kind of ideas, Paddy, me boy?
What kind of good can any man be accomplishing in an empty house late at night, I ask you, Mr. O'Doolan? Oh, he was done to a turn, he was, when I burst in the door with me axe. Save Satan the trouble.
Charred.
Empty whiskey bottles scattered all about. Sin, O'Doolan, sin. He'd gone to sleep with a smoke and cigarette that set the whole place off. Vice rampant!
From there, I went downtown to a telegraph office where I sent a wire to Toledo on a long chance. And while I was waiting for an answer on a not-so-long chance, I slunk into the Bon Ton funeral parlor to pay my respects to the departed. I stood in the back of that dimly lit chapel and scanned the scene. Three of the boys from Homicide were there, blowing their noses. Two chorus girls I thought had long since forgotten me were there in black, deep V-necks. My insurance man was there, looking awful worried. One Chronicle reporter with photographer, and a shoeshine boy from our building, and the bailiff from the courthouse, just to mention a few I could make out. And you were there, Effie, up front near a closed casket. I made out a bower of flowers from robbery detail. It said, "Goodbye, Sam." Maxie from the city morgue was the only one who looked at ease.
All right. Does anyone wish to, you, miss?
Many called him Shaman. But I called him friend. On this, his last caper.
I was touched, Effie, and I would have stopped the whole thing then and there, but I had to find out who was in that casket. I reeled out the front door with tears in my eyes and slid around to the back door and into Chester Swan's private office. And there I made a phone call and got an answer to my telegram, which caused me to make another call to his bank. By that time, most of it was right in place. A search through his desk revealed nothing, and a safe standing in the corner the same. But then my answer walked right in the door.
Oh, Sam, darling, I was so worried when I found you'd left, but I saw you at the funeral and I thought you'd be here.
And the guy was with you? Was he worried, too?
Oh, him. That was Dr. Jesslyn. Sam, you'd been out for 2 days and I didn't... Oh, Sam, you're safe. You got away from it all. You've escaped, darling.
Yeah, they're burying me right now. I'm dead.
It's so wonderful, Sam.
Only one thing. Where do you fit?
Hmm?
The caper. I was supposed to burn up in that fire, and what was left was supposed to look enough like Theodore J. Swan, class of 1936, Toledo, Ohio, to let beneficiary Chester Swan collect a nice pile of insurance money.
Sam, what are you talking about? Who's Theodore J.? What did you say?
Chester's only living relative. They're burying him right now. Somebody lost his caper. You want to tell me?
Darling, I was at the house the night of the fire, working on my foggy picture. You didn't see me when you went in, and later on you didn't come out. And I went over...
And I was on the floor, and a man was bending over me.
He changed clothes with you, Sam, and I screamed, and he pulled out a gun, and I hit him with a hoe. And I drug you out on the lawn.
And then what happened?
I put you in my car and took you home. I was going to phone the police, but I decided it was something you were working on, and I went back to the house, and it...
And it was burning, and you knew the man you'd hit on the head was in there.
Believe me, Sam, I didn't know the house was going to burn down. I wouldn't kill anybody, Sam. I only wanted to...
You only wanted to help me, and you did right, Angel.
Oh, Sam.
It's all right. I'm your witness. You didn't start the fire.
You mean somebody really started it?
Chester. He thought it was me lying on the floor in there. The bank tells me he's about to go busted. He figured this one out with his nephew to scare up some insurance, though. I'm about the same
size.
Hold
me, Sam. Hold me. It's been horrible. This is the kind of thing I was trying to paint. Now I'm smack dab up against it and I'm sick. I'm scared.
Easy, easy.
Sam, you're really dead. There's our way out, Sam. Just leave now. Let it go the way it is. They all think you're dead.
Oh, dear.
Huh?
But we know different, don't we, Mr. Spade?
He was holding a Navy Colt revolver in front of him with both hands. I couldn't make up my mind to rush him and count on his bad aim or stand still and be a perfect target while I tried to talk him out of it. Either way, he was a crazy man with a gun. He was getting ready to use it.
Sam, he's going to kill us.
Quiet, Mr. Spade, Amy. Because my nephew was stupid enough to wear your watch and your suit when he exchanged clothes with you, I'm going to lose the bonton.
And that puts you in quite a spot, doesn't it, Mr. Swan?
Until a moment ago, yes, but now... Mr. Spade, the newspapers all say you're dead. A death certificate says the same thing. All of your friends are following your casket and my nephew's corpse to the cemetery at this very moment. Everybody expects you to be dead, Mr. Spade.
Thanks to you, Mr. Swan.
But now, nobody'd miss you if I killed you.
I'd miss you, Sam.
But I'd have to kill you, too.
Oh.
Did you notice you're still wearing Theodore's clothes, even his ring? Why, Mr. Spade, I could kill you and put you in a fire somewhere and collect my insurance on Theodore now, couldn't I?
No. Why, that's a terrible thing to think.
Huh?
Oh, you're not reasoning properly, Chester. You really aren't. How would you explain Amy? You just said you'd have to kill her. And what about the coroner's office? You know how they are.
But if I... But
yeah,
really...
don't forget the medical examiner's got something to say, too. Not to mention the fact that you'd have to really burn me up to cover up the bullet hole. And furthermore, Chester, when you shoot me, if you happen to hit a rib and chip off some bone, they'd know I was shot before, and then homicide'd be in on it.
Oh, no, stop. Nothing works for me. I'm a failure.
Oh, go ahead, Mr. Swan. Let it all out. You'll feel better. And he did. And he's still crying in his cell downtown. Period. End of report.
Oh, Sam, you were so brave. You actually stood there and talked that crazy man out of murdering you. You were wonderful.
True, Effie? Amy thinks so, too. She's going to do me in oils when they let her out of the pokey.
Amy's in jail? What for, Sam?
Oh, technical charge of an involuntary manslaughter. They'll spring her as soon as the coroner's inquest is completed. Dear Amy.
Did she make good fudge, Sam?
Fudge? Oh, that was the least of it.
Oh? What do you mean?
After the fudge.
What then?
Panucci. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Say, go type that up, sweetheart, while I see if there's any mention of my miraculous resuscitation on the radio page. Go. Scoot.
There certainly is a mention of Sam Spade on the radio page for Friday. Sam Spade is one more in the list of great shows to join up in NBC's Parade of the Stars. Have you heard The Big Show? This Sunday, The Big Show comes your way once again on NBC. Listen to just a few of the star names who will be appearing this week. Bob Hope, Jimmy Durante, Perry Como, Jose Ferrer, Mindy Carson, Eddie Cantor, Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, and many, many more. And, of course, your MC once again will be the lady who invented the snappy retort, Tallulah Bankhead. Yes, it's The Big Show. It's big in music, big in drama, and big in comedy. Be sure to hear The Big Show Sunday.
Well, here it is, Sam. All typed up.
Good. I will sign it, and you will keep it always to remind you that I'm still here.
Oh, Sam.
Living, breathing, brave, and handsome. A paragon.
Sam, what will we do about the mail?
The mail? What mail? Where?
All the letters and postcards and telegrams and all that came when people thought you... when you weren't good... When they thought you were...
Oh, there have been enough tears tonight, Effie.
Oh, Sam, it's so good to have you back. Will you be the same as you always were?
Well, I'm going to try, Effie.
Because then you can't help but be, like they say, the greatest private detective of them all.
We'll see.
Good night.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade are produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade was played by Stephen Dunn. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Script for tonight's adventure by E. Jack Newman. Musical scoring by Lud Gluskin, conducted by Frank Worth. Join us again next week, same time, for another Adventure with Sam Spade. Hear the Magnificent Montague, then visit Duffy's Tavern on NBC.
From November 17th, 1950, that's Sam Spade and Caper Over My Dead Body. Now we're going to listen to an episode of Escape. Escape was popular in the 40s and in the 50s, and I don't think it got to 1960, but it was popular during the 40s and 50s for sure. This one's called She, and it's from 1948.
Fed up with the everyday grind, tired out from the summer heat, want to get away from it all.
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are deep in a fabulous mountain cavern, surrounded by a horde of menacing natives from a lost civilization, held at the mercy of the most beautiful woman in the world, the terrible queen called She.
Tonight, we escape to uncharted Africa and to an incredible adventure, as H. Rider Haggard described it in his fantastic story, She.
In those days, I was a professor of archaeology at Oxford. And though this may account for my being able to understand some of those strange events which occurred later, it was in no respect the reason for my becoming involved in them. No, the real reason was unbelievably simple. I walked through the caves of the dead in the terrible and ancient city of Kor, crossed the awful abyss and looked upon the flame of life, only because I was one of the ugliest men in England. Because of my appearance, I had made few acquaintances and only two close friends. Roger Vincey, first, and following his death, his son, Leo, whom he left behind. And it was that friendship which brought Leo Vincey to my chambers off the quadrangle. Late in the evening of the day, he became 25 years old.
Today was the first I knew of it, Holly, when the attorneys called me in.
Yes.
They said Father instructed them the week before he died to give me the letter and this little bronze chest on my 25th birthday.
It's strange. I mean, the chest. Designs on the lid show Egyptian influence. It must be very old.
Well, according to Father's letter, it contains something over 2,000 years old.
Really?
Must have considered it rather important. He's closed the cover with a lead seal.
Yes, so I see.
At any rate, Holly, the letter doesn't tell us much. Suppose we see what's inside.
All right. I have a geology hammer here somewhere, my boy. Oh, here we are. And a chisel. Now you hold it in place on the table here.
Uh-huh. Go ahead. Ah, there, it's pulling loose.
Yes. Ah, I did it.
Well, here goes. What the devil is that?
Why, it's a clay tile, an old Egyptian writing tablet. Yes, it's the kind used about the time of Nectanebes, around 340 B.C.
But the writing on it, it's not Egyptian, it's Greek.
Yes, and parts of it are broken away. Oh, it'll take some time to translate this, Leo.
But Father apparently did it, Holly, according to this paper. Listen, here's his translation.
Read it.
I, Amenartes, wife of Callicrates, say this to you, my son. Forced to escape the wrath of the great Nectanebes.
I thought so.
Your father and I fled southward across the waters and wandered for twice 12 moons upon the coast of Libya.
Well, that's the old name for Africa, you know.
Ah, that faces the rising sun. There by the mouth of a river where stands facing the sea a great mountain carved like the head of an Ethiopian.
What is it?
Nothing, Holly. Huh? It goes on. Right. Following the river, we soon fell among... There's a row of asterisks
that
here.
That must be one of the places where the tile's broken. Go on, my boy.
To a hollow mountain where a great city once stood, and to the terrible caves of which no man had seen the end, and to she who must be obeyed.
She who must be... What's wrong, Leo?
I don't know, Holly. There's something familiar about that name, but I've never heard it before. Strange.
Well, come on, get on with it.
She who must be obeyed, who did lead us by awesome ways to the place where the great pit is, whose voice is like thunder, and she did show to us the rolling pillar of life and did stand in the flames. And she spake unto Mai, and there's a large fragment missing here.
Oh, Frequency.
There isn't very much more. Picks up, carried far away on the ships where I gave birth to thee, and came hither to Athens at last. So I say to thee, by these things which I have told, seek out this place, nor stay thy will until thou hast the secret of life for thyself. Sit then on the throne with the Pharaoh. And that's all, Holly. Now, what's it all about?
Leo, if your father knew, he kept it to himself. I don't know. It's all very strange.
Yes. Oh. Well, we'll know as soon as we reach the place.
I was hoping you'd say that. If you decided not to, I think I should have had a try at finding it alone.
Oh, I can't do anything else, Holly. It's more than curiosity. It's almost a compulsion. There's such a familiar feeling about all this. Even that mountain, Holly, shaped like the head of an Ethiopian.
Yes, what about it?
Well, off and on, ever since I was a kid, I've dreamed about a mountain like that. But why, Holly? Why should I?
That was the beginning. And some 3 months later, we drifted down the east coast of Africa, south of Zanzibar, searching the miles of jungle shores for the mountain carved like a head. There were four of us in the tiny sailing dhow. Leo and I, of course, along with Abdullah, the Arab boatman we'd hired in Aden, and finally a solid North countryman named Job, my servant for many years. We'd caught no sight of our landmark as yet, but a native had told us of seeing it once years before, somewhere to the south. So our hopes held high, and we were confident luck was with us. And so it was, until one evening, just at dark.
That's a pretty stiff wind, Holly.
Yes.
You think Abdullah knows what he's doing?
We're rather close inshore, all right, Leo. I doubt if there's any danger, unless a squall hits.
Hey, by gosh, we're strangers here in an heathen land and all. Anything could happen.
It could, Joe, but let's assume that it won't, huh? How's the dory making out back there?
Oh, trailing along all right behind us. Be in a bad spot if we lost it. We have guns, food, equipment, and everything in it.
Yes, I know, Job. Leo, perhaps we shouldn't have packed the stuff that way, Leo. I should have kept it on board with
no,
us.
No, Holly. We want to be ready to shove off up the river as soon as we sight that head. It would be a tough job loading that boat at sea.
Well, we may not have had to, Leo. We've certainly found no reason to so far.
But we will. I've dreamed of it.
Huh? Hey, Master Holly, look!
It's the wind,
the wind's
Holly.
Driving the water ahead of it. Abdullah! Lay under that tiller and head her into it.
I'll give him a hand, Holly. Cut the sail loose.
Yeah, we've not a chance, sir.
Hold on to the mast, Joe.
We shall all be
put
down.
Put down, Leo! The great wave plunged over us, tore away the dory, swamped the dhow beneath our feet, and hurled us headlong into the foaming sea. Half smothered, fighting to stay afloat, borne shoreward by the drive of the tempest, we were tossed at last, one by one, up onto the rain-swept beach. The calm dawn found us huddled together on the sand at the fringe of a dark and forbidding jungle. At the south lay the mouth of a small river, and to the north, the beach ended at the slope of a rocky headland. Leo and Job went to look at the wrecked dory, lying at the water's edge 100 yards away. While I searched the shoreline for some sign of our boatman, I found none, and we never saw Abdullah again.
Oh, Holly. Find any trace of him, Holly?
No sign, Leo. The bridge is gone for good.
Oh, it's too bad.
What shape's the dory in, Job?
Wrecked. Not a chance of fixing it. But the equipment seems to be all right, sir.
Oh, good. It's all there, isn't
it? Yes, most of it. The lashings held and the waterproof case has stood up very well. Only trouble is, we're afoot.
Yes, we're going to have a lot of trouble following the coastline.
We won't follow any coastline, Holly.
What?
We're going up that river. Take a look at that headland there to the north. It shows up better from the wreck, Holly, but with the sun coming up now, you can see it from here, too.
Why, goom, it's shaped like a human head.
That's it! That's the landmark!
Right, Holly. And that's the river Callicrates followed with his wife, the same one we're going to follow.
Oh, but Leo, with the boat gone, we shall have to break trail through that jungle and follow that riverbank.
Yes, we'd better get started.
Look, gentlemen, why can't we just stay here and try to signal ship?
No, there's not much chance of it, Job. They stay pretty clear of this coast. But anyway, this is what we've been looking for.
I don't really know what we are looking for, Leo. It's been more than 2,000 years since Callicrates went up that river. And things must have changed a great deal by now.
Holly, that carved head up there in the mountain. It looks exactly the way it always did when I dreamed about it.
It's incredible.
Strange feeling that whatever Callicrates and his wife found back there in the jungle will still be waiting there today.
For 5 hot, steaming days, we pushed inland through the jungle, following the banks of the muddy river. Mile by mile, the creeping undergrowth became more dense. The river shallowed and became sluggish, and the swamplands began to stretch out from the low banks. Foul pools and stagnant lagoons full of soft black mud covered over with a green scum made every step a hazard. Crocodiles slid away at our approach, and bright-colored snakes glided out from underfoot. Mile after mile, we forced our way through those evil swamps, each mile more difficult. And finally came the morning of the 6th day.
Oh, I don't know, Holly. If it gets any worse, we'll never make it.
Excuse me putting in, gentlemen. But
yes, Joe.
I say we should turn back.
Oh, no, Joe. We've spent 5 days getting this far. It'd be a shame to waste it.
It's just the way I feel. We'll keep on as long as we can.
Oh, what, Leo? What's
it? Oh, I don't know. I stumbled over something in the mire. Here, take a look at it.
It's a rock. Look.
Yes. A square stone. It's been hand cut.
There's another. It's a section of an old wall of some sort.
Or of a dike. That's it, Holly. A long time ago, the river was held between stone dikes along here. Like a sort of canal.
It's possible. That might account for the swampland. The dikes gradually fell to pieces, and the river spread out through the jungle.
Of course. And, Holly, there could be only one reason for building them. So that boats or barges could come in from the ocean to some kind of a city.
A city, gentlemen? Yes. Why don't we turn back while we
That's
can?
It. City, it had to be a long time ago. Centuries ago,
It could still be there, Holly. This place has never been explored. Nobody would ever try to come through these swamps.
That may include us if it keeps... Job, what's the matter with you?
He must be... Uh-oh.
Look!
Natives. Where the devil did they come from?
I don't know. Ooh, strange-looking brutes. Look at those clothes they're wearing.
Yes, I've never seen any quite like them. Except in...
Hey, Gop! Hey, Bakani Biko!
Do you recognize that dialect?
No, it's a little like Arabic. I might try that. Zabul al-Hayir. Kaifa?
Hey, Gop! Ni Bokon ni Vek!
I've never heard anything like it before.
They seem to want us to come along with them, Holly.
Yes.
You think we'd better chance it?
Well, they outnumber us 30-1, Leo.
Yes, and they're all carrying those stabbing knives. Well...
Baka Zedango!
Hang on to your guns. They don't seem to know what they're for. Let's go.
Our strange escort moved rapidly ahead, twisting and turning as they followed some well-remembered trail of their own. We rested during the night on a hummock of dry ground, and then struck out again at dawn. It was late afternoon when we left the swamp and climbed up a long slope to the foot of the rock-walled mountain. Reaching its base, we entered the mouth of a great cavern, and a short way inside, we led into a small side chamber, carved from the living rock and lighted by a reed wick floating in a jug of oil. And then the strange natives went away and left us, and we sat about on the floor, trying to plan some course of action.
Oh, dear. How long do you suppose we've been here, Holly?
Close to 2 hours, I'd say.
Yeah.
Must be dark outside by now.
Holly, do you have any idea what race they belong to? They're not like any other natives in this part of Africa.
Oh, I've seen people much like them in some of the villages in southern Egypt, Leo. But I don't know any more about it than that.
They wear those odd tunics, too. Cotton or linen, I suppose. Those bronze headbands. Must have been out of contact with the rest of the world for centuries, Holly.
Heathens, that's what they are, and up to no good so far as we're concerned. That's
you
what I
right,
think.
You may be right, Joe, but I still want to find out about the other things Amenartes wrote on the tile. The city of Kor and the pillar of fire, and she who must be obeyed.
We found the caves, at least. Though I can't see anything so terrible about them.
Perhaps we haven't seen everything the cave...
Ni bohob.
Oh.
Zeni bahob.
Our little chum.
Zeni bahob.
He seems to want us to follow him.
Mm.
Well, hang on to your guns.
Right, you are. Stick close together. Don't let them separate us. All right, Job? Come, let's go.
Our strange guide led us along the twisting, branching passageways, batting our way with a flaming torch that threw weird shadows on the walls of solid rock. Now and then we passed side chambers lined with long rows of stone slabs. And then I saw that each slab held the sheeted figure of a human body. And I realized these caves were one vast crypt filled with the mummified bodies of some vanished race. Gradually, as we moved on, a most remarkable sound began to grow louder. Made up of the guttural voices of a crowd, the throbbing of drums, and the moan of some strange musical instrument. Suddenly, the narrow passage opened out into a great hollowed cavern where natives danced and postured in the eerie glare from 100 huge torches placed about the walls. I stared in amazement, for the torches were flaming mummies tied upright to the posts, and the guide had lighted our way through the passages with a human arm.
Nebok, Borg Jane.
I think he means for us to walk toward that platform in the center.
Yes. There's a pit of cold burning in the top of it.
Nebok.
Yes, come on. Watch it, Holly. I don't like the looks of this.
All right. Keep your gun handy, Leo. Stay right with us, Joe.
Yes, they look anything but friendly.
If anything starts, try to get on the platform. They've got no weapons except those stabbing knives, remember.
Here we are. Now what?
The Barnivet.
It's quite some fire they've got built up. I can't understand what they mean. Oh,
Joe! Joe! Look out, Holly! They've killed Joe!
The devil's back against the wall, Leo!
Come on, pick up. Watch it, here they come! All right, you!
Stab Joe without a chance there.
What on your left? Holly, let's try for the freight!
Hagger! Hand us him up!
What the deuce is this?
Old man in a long white robe.
Hold your gun ready, Leo. We'll see what happens.
Never, Andy. Andy, Bo.
Well, they're scared to death of him, whoever he is.
Wait, he's coming our way.
I presume you speak English, gentlemen.
Yes, but you do.
Occasionally, natives from the south have come through the swamps, and we have captured them. I have learned many of the languages of the outside world. I am Bilali.
Leo Vinci, and this is Mr. Holly.
I am most sorrowful for the death of your companion.
Oh, yes, poor Joe.
My children had no excuse. They know the law. From now on, you will be allowed to complete freedom. No white man is ever to be eaten.
Eaten?
That is what would have been done to you. But rest assured, her law is just, and their punishment will be swift.
Whose law?
That of she who must be obeyed.
Holly! This is it, Holly. We're still on the right trail.
She has demanded your presence. I have come to take you to the place where she is.
Tell me, Bilali, who or what is this she who must be obeyed? A goddess? A queen? A white woman?
I could not say, my son. I have never seen she. Come along.
Again through those tortuous passages, two of us now, with kindly old Bilali leading the way, until he left us alone at last in a large chamber hung with brilliant colored silks, fitted with soft divans and lighted by crystal lamps. We stood there several minutes, not speaking, wondering, when suddenly the curtains across the doorway parted and a most amazing figure stood before us. It was swathed in folds of filmy white draperies, with soft, gauzy veils covering even the face and hands.
I bid you welcome to the city of Kor, Kallikrates and friend of Kallikrates.
I'm not Kallikrates. I'm Leo Vinci, and this is my friend, Mr. Holly.
Leo Vinci. Vengeance. No matter, you will understand.
Are you?
I am she.
You must forgive us if we find it difficult to understand this. What is all this, these caves, the natives? What is Kor?
Kor is a great city that rose up and then died many thousand years ago. These are the caves of Kor. The city itself stands farther on, in a huge crater at the heart of the mountain.
Are you a descendant of Kor?
I came from another place, far away, and Kor was dead long before I found it. The natives know me as a fearsome figure in white, and they obey me.
They have never seen you?
No, Holly. Not one of them has ever seen behind these veils.
It's amazing to think that Callicrates must have been here in this same place over 2,000 years ago.
2,287 years ago. Callicrates died in this very chamber.
You speak as though you saw it happen.
I did see it happen. I killed him.
But you couldn't. That was over 2,000 years ago.
Yes. And at that time, I had been here in Kor for more than 500 years.
Impossible.
How do you know? You haven't seen me.
But then you claim to be immortal.
Yes. As he could have been had he stepped with me into the flames of life. As you can be my Callicrates, if you so choose.
I hope you'll forgive me, but I can't believe anything so fantastic.
Is it proof you need? Proof that I once did an evil act in anger and paid for it by waiting alone through all these centuries? Proof that my waiting is ended now? Then look upon it behind this curtain.
A mummy. A mummy like those out in the caves.
But look at the face.
Leo. Huh? It's you. That's you lying there.
That is the body of Callicrates, whom I loved, and whom I killed in anger when he refused to leave her and stay with me to become immortal. His wife Amenartes fled across the mountains and later gave birth to his son, your ancestor.
Then, Leo, that clay tile has been handed down in your family for over 20 centuries.
I have paid for my sin, and I have waited, knowing that someday my Callicrates would be born to me again, would come back to Kor and find me.
It was as though I had to. I dreamed of that carved mountain before I'd ever seen it. And your name, she who must be obeyed, it struck some chord in my memory the first time I heard it.
It is your heart that must be obeyed now, my beloved. The decision is yours whether to leave me once again now that you have found me, or to walk with me into the pillar of life, to love me, and to become immortal.
Yes. I feel somehow that this is the ending of something I've been moving toward all my life.
Leo!
Oh. But it isn't possible. Immortality. And how can you love someone you've never seen?
Then you shall see, my beloved. I've worn these veils for you, and for you I...
Oh.
The soft veil slid off from her shoulders, and she stood revealed before us, the most beautiful woman the world has ever seen.
Will you leave me now, my Callicrates, or come with me to the flame of life?
I'll go with you anywhere. Anywhere.
We talked the night away in that chamber, Leo and I fascinated by every word that fell from those lovely lips. She talked of the hidden knowledge of ancient lands, sang softly of her thoughts in rhyme, and spoke once again the words of long-dead poets, forgotten by the world. She made us believe in her own immortality and in ours to come. And before dawn, Bilhali with us, we followed her madly and joyously through the dim and dusty passage that led to the flame of life. We came to a great abyss with a narrow ledge crossing over it like a rainbow rock. There, Bilhali waited, and we three went on alone. At the sight of the awful depths beneath us, Leo and I shuddered in spite of ourselves and moved carefully, step by step. She never hesitated, but swayed along gaily before us like a feather borne on a breeze. Finally, we stood in a vast circular chamber, a great bubble in the earth's crust whose walls were shining black basalt.
Holly.
Yes?
I see there by the wall. It looks like the body of a man.
An old philosopher, my beloved, who came here many centuries ago. He sat and watched the flame and could not decide whether he should become immortal. Finally, he died.
And you? Have you never regretted becoming immortal?
I could not have waited for Callicrates, Holly, had I not been immortal. But you, Leo, perhaps you have doubts.
Immortality will not even be long enough with you. Where is the flame?
Listen. Even now it approaches. It advances and then retreats, a never-ending cycle of life. It has moved along its path through this cavern since the beginning of time.
Holly, look!
Do not fear it, beloved. See, this time I will step into the flame alone. And when it comes again, you may join me.
It's like the fire of the sun and the dust of a million diamonds.
As the great and terrible pillar of flame approached, she threw off her veils and opened her arms to it, and the eternal fire flowed over her. It passed and left her there, standing with her head bowed.
Are you all right? It didn't harm you?
No, my beloved. Can one find harm in the flame that created life itself? Do you believe that...
What's wrong? Tell me, what's wrong?
The flame was different somehow. Now that Callicrates has returned, the curse of everlasting life is lifted.
Leo, she's aging, growing old.
I
do not... If I go... Search for me. Search.
Merciful heavens.
No.
Even as Leo's hands reached out to touch her, they closed on a dry heap of soft gray dust. I knew now that neither of us would step into the flame. And I knew we would spend our lives searching through the world for she. I seemed to hear in my mind once again words she had spoken in those glorious hours the night before. I knew that Leo was hearing them too, and that neither of us, so long as we lived, could ever forget that lovely voice.
Nay, not in Kor, but in whatever spot, in town or field, or by the insatiate sea, men brood on buried loves or unforgot, or break themselves on some divine decree, or would o'erleap the limits of their lot. There, in the tombs and deathless, dwelleth she.
Escape. Produced and directed by Norman McDonald, tonight brought you She by H. Rider Haggard. Adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Dunkel. Featured in tonight's cast were Barry Kroger, Larry Dobkin, Kay Brinker, Ben Wright, and Wilms Herbert. Special music by Ivan Dittmars. Next week.
You are clinging precariously to a diving, pitching longboat, lashed by mountainous seas in the center of a hurricane. And at the helm, driving you on, is a man bent on revenge and willing to kill for it.
Next week, we escape with F.R. Buckley's exciting story, Habit. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.